And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when finally the hush money Trump trial has reached its apparent dramatic climax with the testimony. She's now being cross-examined of Stormy Daniels. What did we learn from that testimony? Anything? Well, we learned that Trump's attorneys probably should have asked for a mistrial or objected more than they did. Trump's lawyer moved for a mistrial based on Stormy making editorial comments together with her testimony about what actually happened between Stormy and Donald Trump back in 2006. The judge denied the motion. He did not grant a mistrial. The trial is continuing. He said something that won't make Trump particularly happy, that Trump's lawyer, Blanche, that's the last name, should have objected more and he would have stopped Stormy. But Trump's lawyers did not object in the course of the testimony. So we got all kinds of details, including the products that President Trump at the time, 2006, remember, kept in his toiletries bag that he kept in the bathroom. And also that, remember the question about Bill Clinton, does he wear boxers or briefs? Well, we now know the answer on President Trump as well, at least according to the sworn testimony of Stormy Daniels. There are all kinds of horrors today about expressions of anti-Semitism and reactions to those expressions of anti-Semitism. President Biden had the opportunity while President Trump is in trial listening to what he has to look back on, that any person would look back on as a dark moment or a dark episode in his life? Or is he proud of what Stormy Daniels is telling the world about his most intimate situations? He did not, with her at least, use a condom. That was some of the information that was found out. But we also have found out just how closely and inextricably the idea of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism are linked. How did we find that out? Because there were pro-Hamas protesters chanting Free Palestine right at Auschwitz in Poland, the site of the death of more than 1 million Jewish people, that one death camp in the Nazi constellation. This, according to footage that has been taken, the pro-Palestinian protest occurred during a march. It's called the March of the Living, which commemorates the victims of the Holocaust. It's where young people actually tour Israel, and they also tour the sites in Poland that are particularly evocative and particularly relevant, like Auschwitz. The pro-Palestinian protest occurred during a march commemorating the victims of the Holocaust on Holocaust Remembrance Day, Yom HaShoah, and footage revealed a large number of police placed around the circumference of the protest. Wynet reported that the police were creating a buffer to ensure that the protesters did not interact with those participating in March of the Living. There's also, speaking about living, there is living, breathing proof of how deeply immersed in knowledge of the crisis in the Middle East the protesters are. I mean, these are people who have really done their homework, are they? They are. There's an extraordinary photo, and it made me laugh out loud, at Columbia. And again, this is Columbia University. Some people say Columbia doesn't really belong in the Ivy League because it's not really in the same class, at least according to some snobbish assessments, as Yale and Harvard and Princeton. But it's in the Ivy League. And these Ivy League students did graffiti on the steps of one of the major buildings. I believe it's the Lowe Library. I'm not sure which building it is. But it's a big, big building on the campus of Columbia. And they used blood red paint and painted the words Free Palestine on the steps of the building. There's just one little detail that deserves a Golden Turkey Award.
Bigger than the Academy Awards.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank God.
Groovier than the Grammys.
I would like to thank my wonderful agent.
And more powerful than the People's Choice.
I would like to share this with every single senator.
Now, it's time for another Golden Turkey Award nomination.
Woohoo! Thank you so much!
And this goes to all of the demonstrators who are so proudly flying Palestinian flags and wearing keffiyehs to show that they are down with the struggle for Palestinian liberation, etc., etc. And they write the words Free Palestine. It must have taken a while to paint it, but they should have done one thing that they didn't do, and that's why they get the Golden Turkey Award. They didn't look up the spelling of Palestine. No, seriously, think about it. How do you spell Palestine? They spelled it P-A-L-A-S as an ass, P-A-L-A-S-T-I-N-E. Okay, if you're trying to make Americans believe that you know something about the subject that you are demonstrating about, misspelling the name of the non-existent country that you think should exist, or are they also suggesting that they should somehow change the spelling of Palestine, which has been a reference, it's a part of the world that has been referred to by that name for several hundred years. Not thousands of years, but several hundred years. And completely bizarre. Speaking of completely bizarre, we will provide some coverage. There is no audio coverage, but we will give you some descriptions of the essence of both the president's speech at the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. for Holocaust Remembrance Day, and of President Trump's alternate tribute to what, I'm not sure, as he is listening, and listening deeply uncomfortably, according to eyewitnesses, to the testimony of Stormy Daniels. There is also incredibly good news on the campus sanity front, which are two words that you really haven't heard together in a long time, campus and sanity. Development being led by MIT, of all places. And remember, the president of MIT was one of those college presidents who was interrogated in testimony before Congress and being asked hard questions about anti-Semitism. Well, they have just taken a step toward sanity at MIT, getting rid of a practice that was deeply racist in its nature. What practice? We'll get to that and to much more coming up on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show, all across America.
I really enjoy your program. I listen to talk radio all day. You're definitely right up there, the cream of the crop.
This is The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Thank you.
on the Michael Medved show, we have some updates coming up later about Kristi Noem and her apparent drive for the vice presidency. I think she has a zero chance at this point of winning that vice presidential nomination. There are also anti-Semitic protesters who have infiltrated congressional hearings and interrupted some strong conservative Republican representatives. We will get to that. And to the very latest on the situation in Gaza, in Rafah, where basically the Hamas deal that was supposed to be on the table has been exposed as a fraud. What a shock from the terrorist organization. The leader of Hamas, the leader who, by the way, is nowhere near Gaza. He is, I think, in Doha, in Qatar, and a multi-millionaire, perhaps even a billionaire. Why? Because he's taken so much of the UN money that has been provided for Hamas and for Gaza that was supposed to be helping poor people, but instead is helping terrorist leaders. Ismail Haniya, that particular leader, had said they had reached agreement. Hamas had never reached agreement with Israel and had made all kinds of demands that were completely unacceptable to the Israelis, like giving Hamas a freedom of movement within Gaza, declaring a permanent ceasefire and an end to the war. In other words, demanding that Israel surrender, which Benjamin Netanyahu, in a very forceful and effective way, said will never happen. Meanwhile, something that a lot of people in the United States were afraid would never happen has happened, and it's good news. The headline in the New York Times, MIT will no longer require diversity statements in faculty hiring. Now, what are diversity statements? Diversity statements, this does not involve people like Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, who made up a false she says it was in her family tradition that she was actually Cherokee and she had a long, proud Indian past. She didn't. She made it up. But that's not what diversity statements are. And I think what's interesting is many of these stories that appear in most places that talk about the diversity statements don't tell you what they are and just how miserable and un-American they are. New York Times writes, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology said yesterday that it would no longer require candidates applying for faculty positions to write out diversity statements. This is not about your own personal diversity. It's about your attitudes toward diversity. Diversity statements have been denounced by conservatives and free speech advocates as forcing a kind of ideological conformity. Well, that's exactly right and good for the New York Times for stating it accurately. In their statements, generally a page long, candidates were required to explain how they would enhance the university's commitment to diversity. Now, this is particularly idiotic at MIT, where the entire focus of the university is technology. It is science. And the idea of making a main goal being changing attitudes toward different ethnicities or toward ethnicity in general was always ridiculous. In announcing the change, MIT's president, Sally Kornbluth, said that she's the only one of the three faculty presidents who McGill at Penn and, of course, President Gay at Claudine Gay at Harvard both had to resign after their grilling by Elise Stefanik in a committee of Congress. Kornbluth survived, but she survived partially because she was more forward in saying that, yes, it was a problem for people to express genocidal attitudes toward Jews or any other ethnic group. In announcing the change, MIT's president Sally Kornbluth said diversity statements constituted a form of compelled speech that does not work. My goals, she says, are to tap into the full scope of human talent to bring the very best to MIT and to make sure that they thrive once they're here, Dr. Kornbluth said in a statement. We can hold, we can build an inclusive environment in many ways, but compelled statements impinge on freedom of expression, and they don't work. MIT's decision to drop them could embolden other universities to take a second look. A 2021 study by the American Enterprise Institute found that selective universities were more likely than less selective ones to require such statements. MIT, whose students are required to immerse themselves in science and technology courses, has been in the forefront of pushing back against measures that some say could dilute the rigor of its education. After the pandemic, it was among the first universities to restore standardized testing and admission, saying that it helped predict academic success. The practice of screening candidates for their diversity statements, sometimes before considering their academic qualifications, has been attacked as particularly corrosive to the sciences, where maintaining academic rigor in research projects can actually be a matter of life and death. Dr. Kornbluth is a research cell biologist. Dr. Kornbluth, that's the president of MIT, made the move to remove diversity statements with the support of other top officials, including the provost, the chancellor, all six academic deans, and the vice president for equity and inclusion, according to our statement. How about getting rid of the vice president for equity and inclusion, too, once you've taken this first step? But the first step is a good one, and it deserves some congratulations. Meanwhile, just to give you some sense of what is going on this complicated news day, they continue the cross-examination of Stormy Daniels. We will get to that in some detail. But there is also this headline from National Review. And National Review writes, Biden tells Americans to never forget. Now, yes, it's Holocaust Remembrance Day. It's a Yom HaShoah. But is he talking about never forget the Holocaust? Yes, but the headline says, Biden tells Americans to never forget Hamas atrocities and denounces rising anti-Semitism on campuses. A bravo to the president on that. So what exactly did he say? We'll play some of it for you coming up on the Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
On the Michael Medved Show, National Review, a piece by David Zimmerman reports President Biden's speech today. While President Trump is not speaking, he's at real risk of going to jail for a couple of days on this issue of keeping quiet for a while. And he's not allowed to object to what Stormy Daniels has been saying in her testimony. We will get to that. In any event, President Biden is speaking on a weightier matter than what happened in a Lake Tahoe hotel room in 2006 between the then future President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, and Stormy Daniels. who at that time already was a not only a star of adult entertainment, which I think is the polite way to talk about what she does, but also a writer and a director of adult films, which, frankly, I did not know until her testimony today. In any event, yes, I don't think any of these are going to be major Oscar contenders. At least that's my guess. But for President Biden, they say in National Review, while delivering a speech in remembrance of the Holocaust's 6 million Jewish victims, President Joe Biden implored Americans to never forget the atrocities that Hamas committed against Israel on October 7th and denounced the rise of anti-Semitism on college campuses across the U.S. And actually bringing up those things together is very important, and it's very valuable that the president did that. Because what you hear from most sources is that the demonstrators are pro-Palestinian. Yeah, but they're so pro-Palestinian they can't even figure out how to spell Palestine. We were talking before about the graffiti written out on the steps of a building at Columbia University in New York that says Free Palestine, and Palestine is spelled wrong. I mean, just obviously wrong. It's not a matter of opinion. In any event, President Biden speaking at the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., which, by the way, is one of, together with the Smithsonian Aeronautics and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., is one of the most visited museums anywhere, and certainly in the nation's capital. He said that we must keep telling the story. We must keep teaching the truth. We must keep teaching our children and our grandchildren. The truth is, we're at risk of people not knowing the truth. Here we are, said President Biden, not 75 years later, but just 7.5 months later, and people are already forgetting. They're already forgetting that Hamas unleashed this terror, he said of Hamas's October 7th, that captured some 250 hostages at least, and murdered at least 1,200 Israelis. He said, I have not forgotten, nor have you, and we will not forget. The president speaking on this subject sounded like this.
6 million Jews, one out of every three Jews in the entire world, were murdered. This ancient hatred of Jews didn't begin with the Holocaust. It didn't end with the Holocaust either, or after, even after our victory in World War II. This hatred continues to lie deep in the hearts of too many people in the world and requires our continued vigilance and outspokenness. That hatred was brought to life on October 7th in 2023. On the sacred Jewish holiday, the terrorist group Hamas unleashed the deadliest day of the Jewish people since the Holocaust. Driven by ancient desire to wipe out the Jewish people off the face of the earth, over 1,200 innocent people, babies, parents, grandparents, slaughtered in their kibbutz, massacred at a music festival, brutally raped, mutilated, and sexually assaulted. Thousands more carrying wounds, bullets and shrapnel from the memory of that terrible day they endured.
And not only that, because of the war that followed, there are more than 50,000, some people say more than 60,000 Israelis who have been forced out of their homes because they are within rocket range, and particularly on North Israel. They're worried about intensification of the exchange of fire with Hezbollah. President Biden also said this about where we are right now. This is clip seven.
Now, here we are, not 75 years later, but just 7.5 months later. And people are already forgetting. They're already forgetting that Hamas unleashed this terror. It was Hamas that brutalized Israelis. It was Hamas who took and continues to hold hostages. I have not forgotten, nor have you. And we will not forget.
And an unequivocally strong statement about where he actually stands on this issue that's drawing all the campus protesters as well. This is clip nine.
Too many people denying, downplaying, rationalizing, ignoring the horrors of the Holocaust. And October 7th, including Hamas's appalling use of sexual violence to torture and terrorize Jews, it's absolutely despicable, and it must stop. Silence. Silence and denial can hide much, but it can erase nothing. Some injustices are so heinous, so horrific, so grievous, they cannot be buried, no matter how hard people try. In my view, a major lesson of the Holocaust is, as mentioned earlier, it was not inevitable. We know hate never goes away, it only hides. And given a little oxygen, it comes out from under the rocks. We also know what stops hate. One thing. All of us.
And finally, he talked about the deep convictions that are being trashed on campuses across the country. Clip 10.
I understand people have strong beliefs and deep convictions about the world. In America, we respect and protect the fundamental right to free speech, to debate and disagree, to protest peacefully and make our voices heard. I understand that's America. But there is no place on any campus in America, any place in America, for anti-Semitism or hate speech or threats of violence of any kind, whether against Jews or anyone else. Violent attacks, destroying property, is not peaceful protest. It's against the law. And we are not a lawless country. We're a civil society. We uphold the rule of law. And no one should have to hide or be brave just to be themselves.
That's President Biden today at the Holocaust Memorial Museum on Holocaust Remembrance Day. So how goes it with the Stormy Daniels testimony and cross-examination? We'll bring you right up to date and the latest from Gaza as well. That and more coming up on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment. Here's a special discount, 50% off just for being a Medhead annual member. Join today at michaelmedved.com.
On the Michael Medved Show, President Biden spoke about anti-Semitism today and the rising tide of anti-Semitism that is occurring around the world with outrageous protests today at Auschwitz, of all places, claiming, of course, that the Holocaust never happened and that, in any event, the Jews deserved it. How could you deserve something that didn't happen? Never mind. None of it makes any logical sense. But I recently participated, and I told you a little bit about it. I participated in a wonderful conference at Grove City College organized by a great friend of this show, Paul Kangor, and the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. They had a conference on confronting anti-Semitism where Mike Pence gave a magnificent speech, and I gave a pretty good speech too. I spoke on confronting anti-Semitism, the Abrahamic advantage, and that has to do with the America's Christian heritage, which very much honored part of the book of Genesis, in which God promises Abraham that people who bless his children, who will be numberless as the stars of the heavens, that people who bless his children will themselves be blessed. That speech is now on video, and you can watch it if you want. It's posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. I think that you'll learn something if you take a listen to what we had to say there. Meanwhile, the situation in the courtroom is different. About a half hour ago, Maggie Haberman from the New York Times, is reporting from inside the courthouse, says that we just witnessed something that felt like a grade school back and forth. Susan Netschulis, who is one of President Trump's attorneys, got Stormy Daniels to acknowledge. Now, this is going to be very brutal. She got Stormy Daniels, hostile witness, to acknowledge that she had mocked Trump's looks on Twitter. Shocking. I mean, is that is a vicious crime. And Stormy Daniels replied, "I did it because he made fun of me first." Netschulis says that one of them started it, but you both continued it. Remember President Trump started calling her horse face? That was after he offered to get her a position as a contestant on The Apprentice, but that actually never came through. Just to give you some flavor of what this Stormy Daniels testimony was about, first of all, the day began, actually it was yesterday, that the New York Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan, who is overseeing the case, found Trump in contempt again and warned him yesterday that his next gag order violation would result in jail time. And it doesn't mean that Trump will be locked away forever, but he would have to spend 4 days behind bars, at least. I think it is 4 days, standard. Judge Merchan said, "Your continued violations of this court's lawful order threaten to interfere with the administration of justice in constant attacks, which constitute a direct attack on the rule of law," he told Trump. "I cannot allow that to continue." And meanwhile, some of the summaries of the testimony by Stormy Daniels, this from contributors to the Washington Post, and of course they have all these reporters all writing from different perspectives, but all from a fairly similar perspective of being simultaneously astonished and appalled by what is going on here. For instance, Jonathan Swan, this is actually from the New York Times, reported a few minutes ago that as Stormy Daniels was testifying about her defamation claim against Trump, including calling her horse face, the former president appeared for a while to be solidly asleep. Maggie Haberman then reported from inside the courthouse, this is actually just minutes ago, Some of the jurors, while Trump rests, are taking detailed notes on Daniel's testimony. And Jonah Bromwich, reporting from inside the courthouse 9 minutes ago, said Stormy Daniels testifies that it was upsetting to her to hear Michael Cohen talking about the story in public because he could talk about it and I couldn't. The reason she couldn't is because she got paid. She then testifies that Cohen filed a temporary restraining order against her, seeking to keep her from speaking. And around that time, she says she hired another lawyer, Michael Avenatti. I think it's interesting that both Michael Cohen and Michael Avenatti, ended up in jail. Daniels is now walking through the portion of the story where Cohen tried to make her adhere to the non-disclosure agreement while she says he was talking about the case to people. She hired Avenatti to get her out of the non-disclosure agreement, and she told her story to Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes. Doesn't the world kind of know the details of this story? In October 2016, as Donald Trump was running for president, the Access Hollywood tape emerged of Trump bragging of grabbing women by the genitals. This is a piece by Tom Jackman, Washington Post. Stormy Daniels was already trying through a representative to sell her story, and now she learned Trump and his lawyer, Michael Cohen, were interested in buying her story and not publishing it. That's what she testified before lunch break today. Daniels said this agreement was the best thing that could happen because her husband, did you know there was a husband? There was a husband. Because her husband wouldn't learn the details of her tryst with Trump. What a title for a book, Tryst with Trump. I'm sure it will be forthcoming in addition to Stormy Daniels' other contributions. The details of her tryst with Trump, her husband wouldn't know, but there would be a paper trail and the story wouldn't come out. There was angst over whether Cohen and Trump would actually pay the money they had promised, which, based on Trump's record paying money that he's promised to pay, is understandable. There was angst over whether Cohen and Trump would actually pay, according to an email sent from Daniel's attorney, Keith Davidson, who's also testified, to Cohen. She said she was afraid if the payment didn't come before the election, I would never be safe, and I would never be paid, and there wouldn't be a trail. Records have shown that Daniels was paid $130,000, and the story did not emerge publicly until more than a year later. Donald Trump, report from Marianne Levine, Donald Trump appeared to be listening closely to Stormy Daniels' testimony. He whispered to his lawyer, Susan Netschulis, as Daniels described taking calls from Trump after they met, and he appeared to hand Netschulis a note. Trump sat back in his chair during much of the testimony and at times turned to speak to his lawyer, Todd Blanche. He listened intently as Daniels described what she said was her final in-person interaction with Trump. No, her final in-person interaction with Trump is going on right now in the courthouse. We will bring you more as it develops because there is much, much more on this. There's also an outstanding letter written by a courageous faculty member condemning the demonstrators who are ripping apart academia. And there is more on the situation, the real situation on the ground in Gaza, and the possibility of any successful conclusion of this war for this